back. This is episode 62 of the Infus Podcast. I'm Brian.
This is Johnny.
And today we are going to talk about Star Trek Voyager as we continue hurtling through the Star Trek TV series celebrating the 50th anniversary.
Don't worry, people. It's almost over.
Almost over. One more week. Woohoo! And then we have another addition to the Certified Infamous reading list this week. And yeah, how was your week?
It's been fine.
Yeah? I haven't really talked to you at all.
I've been out of sorts, I guess.
Yeah, I've been busy too, so.
I've been working.
I've been looking for a job.
Yeah.
So that's a full-time thing in of itself. But yeah, I don't know. I did catch up on S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And I texted you. I said that I think the 10 o'clock time.
Were you already caught up on S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I watched the pilot or the premiere. So, and I really think the move to the 10 o'clock hour is going to make a huge difference in the show. It'll allow them to be more in line with what Netflix does. Obviously not as graphic, but definitely with that tone.
Oh, with
that
more
tone.
adult type story?
Right. Less ABC Family.
Okay. So. I never really felt that on that show, but
I didn't either. But yeah. Whatever.
People
I mean,
say that, and I'm like, okay.
It's a pretty dark show.
I was gonna say, like, last year didn't the ward thing like eat people and literally left their soaking bones
like
in the
blood soaked. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, and if you are listening to this within a few days of it coming out, we are most likely at the Cincinnati Comic Expo. You can find us typically walking around, check the Queen City Comics booth. We typically use that as our home base. Johnny will be there all day Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yes.
What are you looking most forward to?
I don't know. I really don't know.
I think I'm looking forward to just getting down there on the Friday night
and
just checking it out and planning what I'm going to do on Saturday.
What am I hoping to find?
Yeah.
The first and last issue of the Marvel Comics Star Wars original run for a reasonable price.
Define reasonable price.
I would like books that have nice looking covers.
Mm-hmm.
They can have some writing in them.
Mm-hmm.
$50.
Total or each?
Each.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. If I found the first appearance of Boba Fett at a store for... It was a $20
mm-hmm.
just because it had writing on the back cover.
Oh, yeah. You told me about that.
Yeah, it has writing on the back cover, but the front cover looked excellent.
Cool.
Like, you know, not the best, but,
right.
You know, better than some books I've bought. And that, I mean, you know, that's all I want.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'll just be looking around. I'll probably buy prints from artists like I usually do.
I'm going to try and do a sketch from Todd Nauck, see if I can get on his commission list. Yeah. So I don't know what I'm going to do yet. I'm thinking Cyclops.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking the Red X Cyclops, but then I'm also going back and forth because I'm probably just going to do the headshot.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking maybe 90s Cyclops might be the better, like just more recognizable one because then people come and be like, why do you have a picture of Racer X on your wall?
Yeah, true.
I don't. It's Cyclops. Leave me alone.
Why does Cyclops look like Racer X?
I don't know. Ask Marvel. He's dead anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right, so let's hop into the reading list this week. Kingdom Come. It is it's required reading if you're a comic book fan.
At this point, it's what, 20 years old?
96, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you are new to comics, this is a book that you should definitely track down. It's available everywhere. It's not out of print or anything like that.
No, not at all.
It's on Comixology. You can definitely find it. It was a 4-issue miniseries published in 96 by DC under their Elseworlds imprint.
Mm-hmm.
And it's written by Mark Waid with art by Alex Ross. And it's a concept that was an original idea that these guys came up with.
More Alex Ross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man, it's one of those ones where when I got back, cause like that was 96 was around the time where I kind of fell out of comics a little bit just because, that was the year I graduated high school. I was going off to college.
Sure.
I didn't have any money. I was running cross country. You know, it was like there just wasn't time. And then when I got back into it in late mid 2000, it was one of the first things I picked up. So, and then you made fun of me because the spine is in pristine order. Saying that
my trade paperback because I have
I have
the Absolute Kingdom Come, I have the Kingdom Come slipcase, and the Kingdom Come trade paperback.
Nice.
And the trade paperback looks like I've dropped it in a toilet, ran it down the street, tied it to the back of my car, and drove it through a dirt field a couple times. Nice.
That's my Death in the Family.
That's another one.
That's totally beat up. But no, I have it. I have the trade, and then I also have the digital version, and I typically go and read the digital version of everything just because I typically have that stuff with me. But yeah, it's such a cool story.
Well, to start. Yeah. You asked me what should we do this week? You know, we're trying to do this every once in a while, but it was like, you know, I didn't want to do something new because I'm like, you know, there's enough talk of everything new. And I'm like, I was sitting there, I'm like, dude, Kingdom Come. It's like, that's, you know, it's right up there with Watchmen in my book. Yeah. V for Vendetta and Watchmen, Kingdom Come, you know, Alan Moore Swamp Thing. Marvels, which Alex Ross also worked on, is another story that this is like told from a different point of view because it's the man on the street type thing. I mean, it's his father. You know, he used his father's model for Norman McKay, and it's him and the Spectre traveling the world and seeing where things went wrong with the superheroes of, you know, the ones that we know, plus their children and grandchildren.
Yeah, and the whole new breed of heroes that are much more violent. And, you know, honestly, like, you look at this and the way the violence goes and just kind of, the way the heroes act.
Yeah.
It's very much what the New 52 looks like.
Yeah. 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 And it's what, and it honestly is what Image looked like at that time.
In the 90s,
so that's that. This is an acknowledgement of DC with Image because the younger generation was acknowledging some of those Image characters. Yeah. I mean, some of them resemble.
Oh yeah.
In that. I mean, obviously Magog doesn't resemble anything I'd ever seen before. No. And I think it's an awesome looking design.
Yeah, his helmet with the big like ram horns and you know, but it also raises the interesting question is, you know, what is too violent, you know, and when do heroes stop being heroes?
Well, right.
And then kind of like who watches the Watchmen type of a thing.
Right.
Like who then is responsible for keeping these people, these super beings in line?
It's the thing where it's probably mid 21st century Superman's disappeared because he finally killed somebody.
Yeah, and Lois.
Or he didn't kill somebody. Magog killed somebody and pretty much shoved it in his face and said, you know, your generation's done.
He killed the
the Joker.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, it's 20 years old. So Magog killed the Joker and Superman's like, well, why'd you do that? And he's like, because your time in the sun is over, old man.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, fine, I'm gonna go to the Fortress of Solitude and have a faux Kansas and raise faux cows.
Yeah, pretty much the only one he stayed in contact with over the years is Diana.
And that was Wonder mainly Woman. Because she made it a point to go visit him and make sure he wasn't losing his marbles.
Gotham pretty much fell.
Mm-hmm.
They found out who Bruce Wayne and Batman were.
It was
were.
Two-Face and, was it Bane? Two-Face
and they
Bane.
Blew the, they blew the hell Manor out of the Wayne Manor. And pretty much just people disappeared that, you know, were like, because Superman inspired them and Superman disappeared, they disappeared as well.
They made a very big point that like he was their leader and they took the lead from him. Interesting thing, Alan Scott Green Lantern.
Yeah.
You know, there's no mention of like Hal or the other lanterns, which I always found pretty cool.
Yeah.
Just because it was different, right? And there he is up in space with
his whole thing was that he constructed a castle satellite in space in case any aliens ever decided they wanted to try and invade Earth again.
Right.
And that, which tells you that there's some bad things happened in this world anyways. Oh, yeah. And that I don't know like what the deal was without the Green Lantern Corps in there. I just assumed because bad things had happened that the Green Lantern Corps wasn't there. Jade wasn't there.
Yeah.
So, you know. it's a cool story. I mean, the Flash, or the Flashes, I guess you would say, that show up and that, and just the intricacy of showing how important Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are to any DC universe, since this is an Elseworlds book, is really like a major thing. And then Alex Ross's art's just knocking it out of the park on every page.
You have to too, like you're saying, the art, right? It's this beautiful painted style. Yeah. It's like everything is like cinematic and epic. The page where Shazam shows up, or Captain Marvel, you know, he's Captain Marvel in this. You know, that right there is like, if I could buy a page from this book, it would be that page. And this was doing the hero versus hero thing long before it became
a common thing.
It was definitely that like Civil War aspect, because you had Bruce, who, you know, was essentially teaming up with Lex Luthor.
Yeah, the Legion of Doom.
It? The Human Liberation Front, or whatever they were called. And then you had the heroes, and they were like, you know,
well it was the whole thing where Bruce is like, I don't think, you know, we should be going the way we're going. They were imprisoning everybody that was, you know,
stepped out of wild. Line. Quote unquote, stepped out of line. Yeah. So,
yeah, it was pretty much Clark coming back because something pretty major happens in Kansas, and Clark comes back and pretty much says, this is how it's going to be. Yeah,
you guys
and
are
if
done.
You don't do it, I'm going to put you in jail.
Yeah.
And that there's a cool scene in the bar where all the like modern heroes gather, and you know, they're drinking and half of them are drunk and everything, and he walks in and everybody's like freezes pretty much, and it's like, okay, Superman's here.
So and it's a new the other cool thing about this Superman is the S.
Yeah.
It's one of the cooler S's.
Yeah. I had that t-shirt with that
S. I never did. Like our buddy Dave Powell, he had that one, I remember, for a long time. He was on, like, episode 4 or 5. But anyway, like I said, like, it's required reading. It's my favorite of all the Elseworlds books.
Yeah.
It probably goes this one, then The Nail.
Okay.
And then the one where it was the Batman, Superman, where he landed in Gotham.
Oh, yeah. One that I...
Yeah. I forget the title. I just had a brain fart. It's been a day. Anyway, but yeah, so Kingdom Come, it's from DC under Elseworlds, printed in, from 1996. You can get it in your local comic book store. It's actually, I've seen it in Barnes & Noble still.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can find it on Amazon. You can find it on Comixology. Yep. You can find it pretty much everywhere. Because it is one of those stories that, you know.
It's timeless, too. Yeah. That's the beauty of it, is you can pick it up wherever.
I read it once a year.
Yeah, that's what you were saying.
Yeah, like, I read it once a year, and it's like, you know, it's just one of those ones where I dig it out and just read it once a year, and that's why the trade paperback looks the way it does. Cool. All pages are still attached.
For now.
Yeah. 20 years from now, all pages will probably not be attached.
You'll have to write the page number on them.
Right.
So you know.
No, it'll just be packing tape.
Oh, no. The page numbers are on there.
It'll be scotch tape or packing tape into the book.
Nice. Nice. All right. Let's...
Like I said, a book hasn't been written unless the spine's broken.
Yeah, that's what you were saying. That is it. All right, so let's talk about the Oregon Trail version of Star Trek. Star Trek Voyager.
I don't think that's true.
You have space dysentery.
Yeah. Well, so that would be interesting.
All right. So you put together a list. Like, you even were surprised.
Yeah, I was.
With how many of these, but just.
But I went through and just like was reading the, like, synopsis, and I'm like, yeah, that one was good. That one was good.
Yeah.
And I'm like, woo.
Okay, so
there's a lot that were left off.
Yeah. All right. So let's just set this up. Star Trek Voyager was from 1995.
Mm-hmm.
It was the third, or fourth spinoff of Star Trek.
Third,
sorry, you're right.
You don't count the animated series as a spinoff.
Yeah, anyway. So the series was created by Rick Berman, Michael Pillar, and Jerry Taylor. And you know, it aired on UPN, and it was the network's second longest running show.
Yeah, it was.
Which I was shocked to see that the show went for 7 seasons.
That was pretty much the deal back then.
Yeah. I just, for some reason, I didn't remember it being that many.
I think because they let the show go for 7 seasons, that's why Enterprise did not go for 7 seasons.
Well, the other thing is it seems like every season was 26 episodes. It was almost like a syndicated show, but it was on a network.
Yeah, it was 26 episodes every season.
But so Voyager...
Lots of two-parters.
There were a lot of two-parters, which, you know, honestly wasn't a bad thing. And we'll get into that. Yeah. But it's the 24th Century Adventures of Captain Catherine Janeway and the USS Voyager. It's the smallest ship that we've followed on TV to that point. It only had 150 crew members, but it's fast and powerful, and it could actually land.
Yeah,
which was cool. That was always neat with the couple times that they did that. And then the other thing is it had like synthetic neural interfaces.
Yeah,
so it was like a bio
that
ship.
That
kind of
went away after. Yeah. After the first 2 years,
well,
but
I kind of feel like all that technology probably got destroyed because they had to build
and
rebuild that ship all the time.
It comes back, but it's like one of those things where it wasn't a major point after a little while, I guess, just because it was like neural gel packs. Mm-hmm. It's like they didn't have a real good explanation of what they were.
Yeah.
If they would have made it, it's one of those things where if they would have made it where they were some kind of program or something in the neural gel packs, then it would have been more of a character.
Yeah.
And I don't think that because it was,
well, they already had that with the doctor.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, so they get shotgunned to the Delta quadrant.
It rolls out of the whole Maquis.
What is it? 700,000 light years away.
The whole Maquis thing that was introduced on Deep Space Nine. And, Janeway's chief of security is undercover and disappears and doesn't report him for like a week.
Right.
So she's like, we got to go find out what happened to him and just find out if he's dead or not. They had introduced the thing called the Badlands into the Star Trek universe, and it's where most ships could not fly.
Yep.
Like big ships, starships and that. And that, the Voyager was an exception because of the neural gel packs and all that technology that they had stuffed into this,
and Tom Paris.
It was kind of an experimental vehicle.
It was, yeah.
And then they run into the same thing that Tuvok, who was her chief of security, and the Maquis group he was with ran into, and the ship gets knocked into the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, by an array.
Yeah,
that is helping one alien race, but causing kind of disharmony
havoc
within the rest
the
of the I'll say the pilot was interesting in the way they introduced the characters, mainly because to me, like, a lot of them came off as really milquetoast at first. It didn't feel like they had a real clear idea of who anyone was besides Janeway, Paris, and Chakotay. Like, the rest of them, like, even like Tuvok to a point was like,
oh yeah,
you know, like,
he's a Vulcan, but what's
he's
deal?
A Vulcan security officer? Yeah. Like, you know, is he a scientist? Is he, you know, because like they would ask him the science questions, and then you have a character like B'Elanna, who was an engineer but was half human, half Klingon.
Right.
You know, it was just I don't know.
The whole Maquis element is what threw that show for a little bit, I think, because it was the whole thing where integrating that rebel group into the Starfleet way, and then they just,
Well, what was it, like episode 9 where the Maquis tried to stage the coup of the ship or
whatever? Well, it wasn't even a real, it was a holographic thing or something.
But, you know, and they quickly moved on from that.
The first year was pretty much the only year where they really dealt with Maquis besides like some holographic stuff and there's an episode called Shattered where the ship runs into like some kind of space anomaly where it literally takes the whole ship and puts different timelines.
Mm-hmm.
And the only one who's like able to do crossover is Chakotay because he gets injured somehow.
Right.
And that, like cool things that they dealt with the Maquis, because, you know, obviously the group did not know that Tuvok was a spy until you know, Janeway and Voyager shows up and like, oh, Tuvok, blah, 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 blah. Well, and eventually in the first season, they revealed that there was a Cardassian spy on there too. Her name was Seska. And like, you know, that made some cool stories in the second season because she pretty much like runs and joins the bad guys who are the Kazon.
Yep.
And so. that was kind of cool. I mean, the first two seasons are not really that strong.
No, you know, and I think like outside of the original series,
yeah,
like the first season for most of these shows is pretty weak.
I mean, like what the first season, I listed three episodes.
Yeah,
and Eye of the Needle is like one of the best of the Voyager episodes, I think. Mm-hmm. And then the second season, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Mm-hmm. Five episodes. So, yeah, those two were not the strongest of the series. But, you know, it got good after that.
You know, it did. As they got, like, further, like, into the Delta Quadrant, coming back to Earth, like, as they... Because they ran into probably the most interesting set of alien races.
Yeah, up until this point, it was like, you know... very human looking aliens, and they were running into some not so human looking aliens.
Yeah, like the 859s or whatever the Borg called them. Those guys were cool. All the interactions with the Borg were cool.
Yeah. Bringing on 7 of 9, I think, helped the show immensely.
Yeah.
For the last few years. I think if they wouldn't have brought 7 of 9 on, that show would have ended sooner.
You know, part of it was because, like, the main scientist on the show was Janeway.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she had the engineering and the science background, and that was kind of who she was.
Yeah, because she had mentioned that she was the science officer on Tom's father's ship and that. So it's like, and I mean, there's a book. What was cool, because Jerry Taylor was so involved with the show, she wrote a book that told the origins of the characters.
Okay.
And that, like, gave a little bit more backstory. Yeah. And it was one of those things, if you were interested and you wanted to read more, I think it was called Pathways or something.
Okay.
And that, and it was just, if you're interested, this is a canon book.
Okay.
It wasn't non-canon. It was actually canon. She said it was a canonical book. And that, which she left, I think, what was it, after the fourth year or something? She left, and it was like, you could kind of tell that some of the quality of the show went down. But then some of the quality of the stories went up.
Right.
Because she was, you know, it was the first time a female had been a creator of a Star Trek
series. Yeah, she was the showrunner.
Yeah, she was a showrunner. And it was like one of those things where you had very strong female characters on this show. And
And
I think that complements the show, is like, you know, besides Janeway, B'Elanna
was great.
7 of 9 were very strong, like, female characters.
And even, was it the girl?
Kes.
Kes. Yeah. She was great.
Like, yeah.
You know, because she kind of filled that Deanna role.
Yeah.
Because she was the telepath and,
right, yeah,
and that kind of stuff.
Her species had that ability. And
but, you know, she also had a very limited shelf life because they only lived 9 years. So
yeah, and I think this is, she had a limited shelf life because they couldn't come up with decent stories for her. So it was just one of those things where I think she was ready to go and they were ready for her to go. Mm-hmm. And she left and Jerry Ryan came on.
Yep.
And that, it all worked out for, you know.
I mean, obviously, like, you know, Jerry Ryan is very, very attractive.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that didn't hurt either. But the way she played 7 of 9 was great, but I mean
this show really had controversy from the beginning because originally I believe Genevieve Bujon.
Yeah, there was a French actress who was supposed to play her, and they changed the name.
A very you know, good actress.
But she was not a TV actress.
Yeah,
so she was film, and she quit like on the second day.
Yeah, she was like, it was in the first week, and like, they had filmed a lot of the like bridge stuff and just, she couldn't keep up with the lines and that. And I guess Kate Mulgrew had been one of the like alternates that they had. And they literally told Genevieve, you know, you can go.
Yeah.
And that, and they called Kate Mulgrew up and, you know, she was there and she was ready to go.
I can't imagine the show without Kate Mulgrew.
Yeah.
You know,
She literally is the heart of the show.
She is. And as much as we talked about how like Kirk was that paternal figure.
Yeah.
Like she was that mother figure, yeah. But she was not maternal. You know, she made them work and you know, she kept them going. She was
more since you compared it to Oregon Trail. Yeah. She was more the school mom.
Oh yeah.
And more the, you know, we need to get this done. And we got to get home.
Yeah.
But it was the whole thing where it was also, she considered all of them her family because they had lost so much.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of people had died when they got knocked into the Delta Quadrant and just trying to get her people home.
Right.
And that, I mean, it factors into the finale, like majorly. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of similarities between the finale of this and the finale of Next Gen, which we can get there later.
And Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, I guess.
The whole thing is like, you know, I think that sometimes it's just we got to end the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's you get left hanging. It's literally Deep Space Nine and Voyager did not have the thing that Next Generation have of going to cinema.
Right.
And that, so, you know.
Well, she was a nemesis.
Well, yeah, you found out that she took a promotion to Admiral. Right. But, I mean, that was, I think they had put that into, there was a exhibit in Las Vegas that was called the Star Trek Experience. Yeah. And there was a ride called the Borg 4D Invasion.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in it as Admiral Janeway. So it's one of those things where they literally tied that together really well.
Yeah.
And then brought her into Nemesis, which was cool.
Yeah. You know,
I thought that was a cool little nod to stuff.
Nice little tip of the hat.
Yeah.
There. No, the two-parters is something I wanted to touch on because the other series didn't do a lot of this, right?
No.
But you had like...
I mean, they did the season finale, season premiere two-parters, but then they started doing them in the season.
But they had like the Year of Hell, right?
Oh, that was... You know, that's which one of the is best. Great.
Yeah. The Killing Game. You know? What was the other one? Flesh and Blood. What was it? Well,
The Killing Game... The Killing Game and Flesh and Blood... are a continuing arc.
Yeah, it's
story.
Like it's a four-part arc. And it's not even that, too, because there's like three episodes before that
where they
tie
introduced
into
the Hirosion.
And,
yeah.
You know, Tony Todd coming on with the Hirosions in that first
episode.
They
literally
was great.
Had, like, I think a lot of well-known actors played Hirosions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that on that show.
And then, what was it, the Kazon with Kurtwood Smith?
No, he was in the Year of Hell. He was the...
It started with a K, but whatever
remember.
The Imperium.
Krynum Imperium. Yeah, Krynum Imperium.
Which this show dealt a lot with time travel.
Yeah.
And that was one of the better uses of time as a weapon than in any other sci-fi, save maybe Dark City.
Yeah.
So...
The whole altering time and, you know... It has a cool ending.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they actually came up with a very well explained ending.
Yeah, it was satisfying and things like that. You know,
the Q show up. I mean,
I love that he has the kid.
Yeah,
and then like he grows so fast and he comes back and it's actually
John DeLancey's son.
Right.
Yeah,
and it's like man, he looks just like his dad, and that was the last thing he ever did.
Oh, was it?
John DeLancey's son. Like, he didn't do anything else. Which is like, man, he was like tailor-made for that end of the 90s, early 2000s, like whiny, rich kid.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like how he wasn't on something like the OC.
It's funny because you see pictures of him on the bridge of the Enterprise D as a toddler. Yeah. And then eventually he ends up on Voyager.
So speaking of like the bridge, right?
Yeah.
The layout of Voyager's bridge was something that always just kind of made me pause, right?
Yeah.
It didn't seem to have any rhyme or reason where the different stations
were. Why things were where they were.
Like, in the fact that the helm was offset and, like, looking away from the view screen.
I don't think it was.
Yeah, he was looking to the, like, the left. So he had to turn to his right to look at the view screen.
I thought it was more, it was just a big board. And, you know, it was literally him spinning around.
Yeah,
doing
no,
stuff.
It, like because they show, like, the backside every now and then.
Yeah.
And, like, he's just kind of, he's off center. Which was like, okay, but that's just kind of, like, you know, it was just weird. Like,
right.
As I'm motioning like people can see me right now. But it was also one of those bridges where it's like, well, no wonder everybody died when this thing hit any kind of turbulences. Right. Like, it needed to be baby-proofed because there were so many sharp edges and corners everywhere.
Yeah.
And then there were the railings for people to fall over.
Well, like you said,
it
was the 90s, so everything had to be sleek and stylish.
Oh, very metallic.
Yeah.
Whereas the bridge,
you got to put a giant the design of the ship right behind the captain.
Oh, yeah.
So you can know what the ship looks like the whole time.
She almost never sat in her chair. Never. I don't know if you ever noticed, Chakotay sat in the captain's chair more than anybody.
Probably.
Because
the whole time he was planning to kill her and just take her over.
The best thing about Janeway, though, the absolute best, besides her like hubris and like, you know, her just stubborn.
Yeah.
Was just the way she would lean against stuff.
Yeah.
It was like, it was so casual.
She always had
a cup of
coffee in her hand.
It was I just was, you know, expecting her to be like, yeah, Tom, I'm going to need you to come in on Sunday.
Yeah, nice.
You know,
nice.
It was just very much that like boss mentality.
And that's literally what she wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't like, you know,
she was an administrator
with Next Gen. It was, you know, Picard eventually became the father of those.
Yeah.
People.
But this was her first time as a captain. You know, this is her first time being in charge of people. I don't remember reading anywhere if she was
that,
a first officer, really.
Compartmentalized. She didn't compartmentalize.
No.
It was just, let's get this shit done. Mm-hmm. And that was it, you know?
Her compartmentalization was like kind of in that, the Batman vein.
Right.
Where it's all about the mission.
Yeah.
Like everything else.
We got to get home.
Yeah. Which is what makes the finale so great.
Yeah.
But it's also what got her into so much
trouble. Well, and I think like when they started the show, she was hard edged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And by the end of it, she had softened up to the point that it was like, you know, she was very relaxed with them. They were family. Mm-hmm. You know, I think she thought of like Tom Paris and B'Elanna as her kids.
Yeah. And Seven of Nine as her daughter that was rebelling against her at every
turn. I think it was
turn.
Just that thing like Harry and those younger ones of the group were, you know, like kids to her. Chakotay was like her brother, you know. At one point, I think the writers were trying to put them in a moonlighting situation.
Yeah.
And eventually it was like, that don't work.
Yeah.
So it was more the brother-sister relationship came out of that. And that helped with Chakotay and Seven of Nine becoming involved. And I think that was more of an ideal situation anyways.
One of the best things about Seven of Nine was Harry Kim's crush on her.
Yeah.
And, you know, they all knew. Yeah. They all made fun of him for it, you know.
Well,
Harry Kim
had a crush on a holographic image at one point.
Well, yeah.
So
very Reg Barkley of him.
Yeah.
So,
but it's just one of those things where, you know, it was a solid cast. I mean, some actors had been around for a while. I mean, Robert Picardo playing the Doctor was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Russ, who had been around for
he's ruined for me as Tuvok now because the kid Bot 07 is such a fan of iCarly.
Okay. The principal.
He's the principal on iCarly.
I think of when I see him is Spaceballs.
Yeah, well, that's
because
too,
he's combing the desert with a pick, and they're like, "You found anything yet?" And he's like, "We ain't found shit."
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's what every time I see Tuvok, I'm like, "Could you just say,
say it, please say it."
But it's, Robert Duncan McNeil had been on Next Generation.
Yeah.
And I think that's where they kind
of
made
him. He directed most of the episodes of Chuck.
Oh, dude. He directed a lot of these.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was fun. I met him at Dragon Con it's been almost 10 years ago. And it was just fun to ask him, you know, about the progression of being a director and stuff like that. Because he's still directed. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's still directing.
Oh, yeah, you see him pop up on TV all the time.
The cool thing is to know, like, with Deep Space Nine, behind the scenes, I'm more interested in behind the scenes with these people and with what happens. And at like Deep Space Nine, these people were really like together so much that they actually became a family. Yeah. Like, you know, at one show that was local, Kate Mulgrew was there on Sunday. She could come on Sunday. And Tim Russ had been there all weekend. And Tim Russ literally came into the audience and sat down and was sitting there and like, she's answering questions and that, and he puts his hand up, but like, so she couldn't see him, and he literally is like, they hand him the mic, and he's going, Captain Janeway, can you tell me when this happened in this episode? And she's like, who is that? And she's looking and she's like, get up here. And literally, like, they had a conversation like we weren't there for like 2 or 3 minutes. And it was just
that's really cool.
Of those things where it's like, that was cool, because it's like, you wonder about that stuff. And, you know, that makes the show a little cooler to know that, it was work, but it was, they were having fun too.
Yeah. What did you think of Voyager as a ship? Like, outside of the neural gel packs and that kind of stuff.
I liked the idea of landing.
Yeah.
I thought that was a cool idea. I never got the idea of why, when it's in cruise mode, the wings are down, but when it's in warp speed,
it's like
that's kind of inconvenient. Because what if one of them, because they never did that story, but what if one of them would have jammed up?
Well, and I can it not go to warp?
Yeah. You know?
I like that it looked like an arrowhead.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was one of the really cool things.
It was more interesting in the fact that because it was a smaller ship, the engineering sections were smaller. Yeah. You know, it was like not so much where you're like, damn, that's like that many decks and they got down there that fast.
Yeah.
It's like you believe they got down there that fast because the bridge was maybe like 6 decks up from the engineering. Well,
and they were always like, it's only got 15 decks. Yeah. You know, like, it seems like every few episodes they said that. Yet they still had 2 holodecks.
Yeah, well,
which was funny.
You got to have those holodecks.
Yeah, you do.
Tom Paris has to have his Captain Proton adventures.
Yes, he does. And, the
holodeck helped with some stories, too. Because there helped, was like, the Fairhaven thing where it was like an Irish town in the early 20s.
When it was her descendants.
When she was falling in love with, she fell in love with like a holographic image too, but because it was like, they're so real.
Yeah.
So it was fun. Those episodes were fun. Reginald Barkley showing up eventually. I mean, the guest cast at the end of the series was like everybody and anybody.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah. It was a huge cast. Like Deanna showed up on the one episode with Reg.
Like Michael Dorn was the only one who didn't show up on the show.
Damn it. Damn yous, Michael Dorn. Damn yous. I'm just trying to think. You know, I definitely will say this. After doing a rewatch, I probably watched 18 episodes the last week and a half or so.
Yeah.
I definitely enjoyed it more.
Right. And there's episodes, like I said, you can.
But I also cherry picked good episodes.
Well, yeah.
Like, I didn't sit through any crap.
Everything on the list, I mean, if you're looking at the list, everything on the list is probably, to me, the best episodes they produced.
Because
there are still some strong ones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that, but like, these are the strongest episodes, the strongest story, the best, like, the best that the cast is on this show, the guest cast and the regular cast. These episodes are the best.
Right. Yeah. Because I joked I was only going to watch the first and the last episode.
Well, and what was funny is, like, you know, I said to you, well, you got to watch the Sulu episode. Mm-hmm. And you're like, Sulu was on an episode?
Yeah, I totally forgot. You know,
and I'm like,
it's that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
because Tuvok was one of his officers on the Excelsior.
During the Undiscovered Country.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, man, they need to go back and re-edit that movie.
throw Tim Russ in there.
Yeah.
Paris was my favorite character.
Okay.
He started off as a prisoner.
Yeah.
And he was there strictly as an observer about the Badlands.
Yeah, you're just here as a consultant.
Yeah. He got the field promotion to be a lieutenant.
Yep.
He got busted down to ensign at one point. And then, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the better episodes where he writes a letter to his dad and, like, he doesn't know if his dad's ever going to read it.
No. The Delta Flyer was a cool idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Having a slipstream ship that could go and kind of make its way around and then come back was faster. The way they had to deal with provisions, it wasn't just, we can just replicate whatever we need. No, the replicator needed, fuel.
Yeah.
Like, essentially, it needed stuff. Like, there was the time where Chakotay gave her the watch, the FOP watch.
Yeah.
Right? And she's like...
Yeah, during the year of hell.
Yeah. She's like, that can feed someone. Why are you wasting time replicating this?
Yeah.
That's food for a week right there. And it's like, well, yeah, I guess it's all matter. Like, I mean, that's kind of, how to look
at just having Neelix to be the...
Well, and then Neelix, the cool thing about him was he would try Earth recipes with alien food. And, like, people would get heartburn.
Yeah.
Or, like, they'd get ill and... I was kind of bummed that he didn't stick around until the very end.
Well, I think it was just the matter of, you know, his story was pretty much like at a conclusion, and that, and to have him find, you
a
know,
whole
because
planet of Talaxians was great, but
his race had been like slimmed down by genocide and stuff like that. And it was one of those things where he didn't know if any of his people were still out there.
Right.
And then to find
a planet
group
of them.
Yeah. And just like be like, well, I can go home again.
Yeah. You guys are going home. I'm home.
Yeah.
Now,
it's like, you know, I think it was one of those things where it was for the writers, it was just, do we keep him on the ship and that? And it's like, you know, or do we just, he stays in the Delta Quadrant where he's from.
It made sense for him to stay.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he had become so enamored with the idea of Earth.
Yeah.
I would have loved for him to at least see it.
Yeah.
You know, but then, so let's get to the finale, right?
Yeah.
The finale is disappointing.
Okay.
It's done well. It's shot well. The upgrades in technology from, like, you know, Janeway 23 years in the future is great, right? It shows like we've learned a lot from the Borg as humans, or about fighting the Borg.
Yeah.
But, you know, they made it home.
Right.
That was the thing. Just not everybody made it home.
Right.
And so she put the needs of the few way ahead of the needs of the many.
Right.
And you know, I said a little earlier that it's similar and reminiscent to Next Gen, and, you know, into a certain degree.
More the conclusion, DS9, the Deep Space Nine conclusion kind of leaves you hanging.
Yeah. Well,
and Voyager really leaves you hanging.
Yeah. But yeah, like she goes and she goes back in time and she breaks every like protocol. Like how there wasn't some paradox that was created that ruined.
Well, and that's where
the universe.
That's what bothered me about it. Yeah.
What really bothered me is they come out and they're in Federation space and they see this fleet and, you know, Admiral Paris and
right.
you know, Barclay and those guys are like, welcome back. And then
that's it.
Like it should have at the very least ended with that ship landing in like Golden Gate Park.
Oh yeah. Like the Presidio or something. Yeah.
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 So landing on Alcatraz.
Right.
You know, something like that.
Yeah, my issue with it is I think that the finale should have been a finale the season before.
Yeah.
And the last season should have been them integrating back into
Earth. That would have been great, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, to see how 7 and 9 would do.
Yeah.
Like, especially, like, Paris.
Well, and the time travel thing to see if it affected anything. Yeah.
Because, like, Tom was one who, he wasn't really too excited to get back to Earth.
It was just, you know, he had grown enough and became like, you know,
well, he became
more of a man.
And
you know, fell in love, was becoming a father and just had a lot of self-doubt.
Right.
And it would have been interesting to see his interaction with his father and his mother
and his kid,
like them, you know, getting used to being grandparents and all that. I think the last season should have been, you know, people coming home.
And it wouldn't even have to be the whole season. Just, even if like that episode was like of the 26 episodes of the final season, if that was episode 21, you know, 20 and 21, you know, it would have felt more satisfying because like, I'm not kidding, man. She reset the Oregon Trail. She's like, all right, I didn't do it right this time. This is where I messed up.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back and I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
And, you know, little Susie's not going to get dysentery. Billy's not going to get eaten by a bear.
Right.
At this point, I'm going to stop and hunt instead of going forward because I broke an axle.
I'm going to go kill the Borg Queen.
Yeah.
Again.
Because
she dies a lot.
She does die a lot.
Yeah, she does.
Anyway.
It was cool that they got Alice Creed.
It was cool.
Back. Yeah.
One of the neat things about that was when the virus was uploaded. The pieces
of her were falling.
Yeah, and she was just falling apart. And then... And then when like it finally like hit her and she collapses, I don't know if you noticed like the shoulder and like breast piece let go, and like the like hunk of meat that was her head and like collarbone area hit the ground and the rest of it just went flat.
Yeah,
it was like nice. It's just a really cool effect. The makeup on this show, outside of 7 of 9, was fantastic. Her 7 of 9's little like eyepiece there changed like way too much. Like sometimes it was really pronounced and dark, dark gray. And sometimes it wasn't. And like, there were a couple times where it was like, it didn't go all the way around. Okay. You know? And it's like, all right, there was a little inconsistency there, but the aliens.
Well, like I said, Michael Westmore and his group, you know, were knocking it out of the park.
And like, you look at like TV shows, right? And you don't expect them to have this amazing budget or, you know, talent putting together these things. I mean, they do this show now. All those things are CGI and they look flat.
Sure, yeah.
You know,
well, that's why, you know, the textures and the Kelvin Star Trek, like, you know, the first movie was a lot of CG aliens. Mm-hmm, right. And by the third movie, there's, you know, actual practical makeup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Practical effects. And a little CG and a little bit of practical is fine.
But like, I mean, like even like the Marvel movies, right?
Yeah.
Like Sebastian Stan's arm is, you know, mostly practical.
Yeah.
And then they go through and they do a CG filter over it to make it shiny.
Yeah.
T'Challa's armor, like, you know, Chadwick Boseman is not a big dude.
Right.
Like they went in and they buffed it up, you know.
Right.
So, you know, obviously everything with Iron Man. Right. You know, there are times where he's in a practical suit that, you know, is CG enhanced.
So on a whole, how do you feel about the show?
I feel better than I did coming into it. I'm still going to, like, you know, for me, it's still DS9, Enterprise, Next Gen, Original Series, Voyager.
Okay.
So, it's not like, it doesn't break ground, you know?
No.
Like all the other shows, like, broke some kind of ground, right? Whether it was breaking down barriers racially on television in the 60s, or, you know, the messages of like drugs and war and poverty in Next Gen, or the political intrigue of, you know, DS9, right? Like, this show didn't have that.
There was a few, but not as much.
But when they did have it, they seemed to preach more.
I think like with the Q showing up in the first episode was the suicide story, and that an assisted suicide.
Right.
And that, I think when the Herosians showed up and it was the hunting, the violence, and that, I mean, eventually with them getting the holographic projectors and killing these holograms who become self-aware and want to be their own people. It was just that matter of that type of stuff was, you know, the gun violence type thing, like, really wasn't like a big deal in the 90s, but that gives you stories that, like, an idea of what we were looking at.
You know, and then like Enterprise, like, it was the way they told their stories. It was everything was the first, you know? And so it was, hey, this is the first time we've hit warp four.
Yeah.
We hit warp 4.1, you know, like while Voyager seems like a special ship and it ends up being a special ship, there's really nothing spectacular about
it. I think it was more just because of, you know, we're in a place where we've never been before.
Right.
And, you know, what are we going to do? How do we survive? And it was always, you know, first time they meet somebody that they've never met before. We're from another place. It's over across. And it's like, Prime Directive?
Yeah. Like, I guess it didn't
apply. Every Prime Directive got thrown out the door on Voyager.
Like,
the Prime Directive, the Temporal Prime Directive.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, everything. The Omega Directive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything got thrown out the door on that one.
All right. So on that note, next week is Enterprise.
Yep.
On Tuesday, we will have our review of the greatest of the Star Trek films.
In your opinion.
The Voyage Home.
Yeah.
And we will be at the Cincinnati Comic Expo this weekend.
I was waiting to see what you're about to say.
I almost said Queen. and we'll do a recap show where the Kid Bado 7 will actually join us for a little bit of that, because she wanted to, I'm going to use air quotes, cosplay.
Okay.
And she's going to wear her Halloween costume. She's going as Rey.
Okay. That's cosplay.
Yeah, but we were at the Disney store and they had a Black Widow one. And it's like, I will buy you that.
Yeah.
Just to wear to the expo, because it was so cool. Because she wanted to go as Rey for Halloween. And she's like, no, I'll just do the Ray one. Like, okay, whatever. I mean, that's up to you, but you know,
whatever works.
Whatever works. Anyway, yeah. So you can find us at infamouspodcast.com. We have new episodes that come out every Friday and occasionally Tuesday episodes.
Mm-hmm.
We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Infamous Podcast. I'm Brian Tudor. I'm at Brian Tudor on most social networks.
I'm Johnny Podorf. I'm Twitter and Instagram at Johnny Podorf. So you can find me there.
Yeah. So, we're closing out next week the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. So looking forward to moving on to the other series. Topics. Yeah. Well, yeah, the series.
We still have the movies to go for the rest of the year, but yeah.
I'm definitely looking forward to moving on to some other topics after this month. So it's been fun. It has been fun going back and watching it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
For you, it's one of those things where you haven't watched a lot of this in a long time. So
I've watched Enterprise most recently, you know, I mean, just because it's, I don't know.
Of the shows, I'll say that before we end this one, of the shows, Deep Space Nine is number one when it comes to bingeable watching. Mm-hmm. Enterprise is number two, probably. Mm-hmm. And Voyager, you can just random pick.
You got to cherry pick Voyager.
And Next Gen, you can cherry pick too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, because there, I think the overarching stories help shows like this a bit.
The fact that, and I'll end on this, the fact that this show would do 4 to 6 episode kind of arcs.
Yeah.
Helped it
greatly
and makes that's the rewatchable part. All right. Well, on that note, we will see you guys on whenever you're listening to this. We'll see you later. But make sure you come back on Fridays to check us out.
Yep.
All right. Have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever you're listening to this, and we will see you soon.
Later.